Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the next class of where we'll be studying the Rosh Hashanah davening. And we began last week, Oleinu, and that's where we will continue. I just want to go back on something last week, where we mentioned last week that Oleinu, again, in the Machzor can be found in a number of places, but you can find it on page 454. In the Art School Machzor, Rosh Hashanah Machzor, 454. The last week we mentioned that Oleinu was composed by Yehoshua after he conquered the city of Yericho. And we had mentioned from the Sifsei Chaim that the read that there is a connection between the prayer of Oleinu and the context in which it was composed, or the historic period in which it was composed. After Yehoshua conquered the city of Yericho, he said Oleinu. He composed Oleinu. Why? Because when Hashem does a miracle to the Jewish people, his name is sanctified, his mastery over the world is recognized. When Hashem does a miracle, and especially in the case of Yericho, where we said, why did Yericho need to be conquered through a miracle? Why couldn't it have been conquered like any other city? The answer is because it was the fortress and the center of evil. And the power of Tumah there was so great that it wouldn't be possible to conquer the city in a normal manner. You needed a miracle to do it. So when Yericho was destroyed, that was, again, that was a bitul hara, that was a nullification, that was a destroying of the evil. Evil is Hashem's creation that makes things look like things are acting outside of Hashem's control. And every time that we overcome evil or we destroy evil, we reveal, again, His kingdom in the world, we reveal His mastery in the world. That's what happened by Yericho, through the fact that it was a miracle and through the fact that it was this destruction of this fortress of evil. And therefore, it was in this context of Gilui Malchusei, of the revelation of God's kingdom in the world, that he said Oleinu. In which in Oleinu, what do we say in Oleinu? We talk about that we give praise and thanks to Hashem. Didn't it make us all like the other nations who all worship the power of evil in the sense of the power of idol worship and pagan worship, which is null and void and vain and has no power. And we are privileged to be able to serve God, the one and only God, master of the world. So when Yehoshua composed Oleinu, he was composing Oleinu in that context, in that situation of this revelation of God's kingdom. That is when he said to compose his prayer, where we thank Hashem that we have the ability to serve Him, the true King, and no other power. So I was just thinking that if I understand this correctly, okay, I can understand that it makes sense that Yehoshua is going to compose Oleinu at this point of time. But this is not the only time Hashem did miracles for the Jewish people. And it's not the only time that you would say that the power of evil was overcome. That's what happened by Yetzias Mitzrayim, wasn't it? When we left Egypt, that's what happened. When the Red Sea was split, that's what happened.
It was a bigger miracle.
Yeah, so what was it about now specifically that in this situation of a miracle and in this situation of destruction of the power of evil, that here Yehoshua composed this special song when it would seem that, you know, it could have been composed earlier under other circumstances? What was unique here that was going to be composed? And I just want to add, and I think perhaps the answer is because this was the first time any of this happened in Eretz Yisrael. Right? Everything else happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. This was the first time that in Eretz Yisrael there was this miracle, that the Jewish people were the vehicle to bring out the mastery of Hashem over the world. This was the first time in Eretz Yisrael that evil was overcome in this kind of manner. And therefore, now that we're finally in Eretz Yisrael, the place what we need for the complete for our service of Hashem to be whole, now when we have this miracle, you know, when a miracle happens, there's an inspiration, and therefore this was the point that he composed the song, but it was composed now more than previously because now that we were finally in Eretz Yisrael, and now our ability to serve Hashem is whole because you can only truly serve Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. It was at this point of time that he composed Oleinu L'Shabeach, that we should thank, we thank Hashem for the privilege that we have to be his vehicle. And when Hashem showed his mastery and he destroyed evil, which again reveals his kingdom in the world, and we thank Hashem for our ability to be the vehicles to do that and to serve the true God, this was done now when we entered Eretz Yisrael, because even though we didn't have Eretz Yisrael yet, but now that we're in Eretz Yisrael, we're beginning the process of getting Eretz Yisrael, this was the point of time where our service of Hashem could be whole. This is the first, and therefore, this first time of this kind of miracle, and this kind of destruction of evil, this kind of revelation of Hashem's kingdom, we thank Hashem for it now in Eretz Yisrael, because now that we're in Eretz Yisrael, that kind of service that we have can be whole and complete. Okay. Now, then we spoke about last week that in the very first line we say, Olenu l'shabech, it's upon us to give praise, la'adayin ha'kol, the master of all. And we spoke about last week that we have the name of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, which is the name that we cannot pronounce, it's the name that we write but we cannot pronounce. And whenever we pronounce Hashem's name, we pronounce Hashem's name of Ad Hashem, which means he is master. And the point that the Sif Sechaim explains is that without the Beis HaMikdash, we cannot truly recognize and appreciate what the name of Yud Kei Vav Kei stands for, which is Hashem's attribute of mercy. We can't see all of Hashem's mercy in a time where we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, we don't have the divine presence in our midst. But in that situation, we can still recognize Hashem as the master of the world. And therefore, Olenu l'shabeach l'adoin ha'kol means that it's upon us to give praise to the master of all, even when we can't say Hashem's regular name, because the power of evil doesn't allow us to recognize Hashem's mercy the way it really is. But even at that point of time where we don't have the recognition of Hashem, it's still upon us to praise the master of all. It's upon us to praise Hashem, who we recognize as the master, for giving us the privilege to serve him. Okay, that's just wanted to cover, just add a little bit more to the things that we mentioned last week. Let's continue. Let's start again. Olenu l'shabeach l'adoin ha'kol, it's upon us to give praise to the master of all. L'seis gedula l'yotzer bereishis, to ascribe greatness to the creator of the beginning. Okay? Let's focus on these words, l'seis gedula, to attribute gedula, greatness. So the Sif Sechaim gives a beautiful explanation to what lies in the word gedula, greatness. And he says this based on the writings of the Malbim in the Sefer Yeshaya, on the pasuk that reads, Hashem b'tzion gadol, Hashem in Tzion, in Zion, Yerushalayim, is gadol, is great. V'ram hu al kol ha'amim, and he is exalted over all the nations. So what is the difference between the word gadol, great, and ram, exalted, high? So the Malbim explains that the word ram, when we say something is ram, something is high, exalted, it means it's high. High means that it's way up there, right? It's not down here at all. It's way up there. That's Rum. That's what Rum means. Rum means high. So Rum means way up there. Disconnected. Way up there and basically not on the ground, but way up in the sky. The stars are Rum. The stars are high up. When we say that Hashem is Rum al kol ha'amim, he is Rum, high or exalted over all the nations, it means to say that the nations of the world, when they recognize Hashem, they recognize Hashem as Ram. He's high up there. Even if they recognize that Hashem created the world, which the commentaries say that idol worship is really not necessarily not believing that Hashem created the world. You can be an idol worshiper and believe Hashem created the world. But what your belief is that he created the world and doesn't bother with it. He gives it over to other things to run. But he's up there. He's way up there. He's way beyond the world, and he has no connection to it. So Ramal Kol Goyim Hashem, Ramal Kol Hu Al Kol Amim, Hashem is higher, exalted over all the nations, means all the nations see Hashem as Ram, as something that is high up there and disconnected. But Hashem is Gadol B'Tzion. Hashem, when it comes to Tzion, when it comes to the Jewish people, Hashem is Gadol. Gadol means large. Large is something that starts on the ground, and it's tall, it's big. Something that's big has lower levels to it, and the more you go up, the bigger it is. So gadol means that it is connected below, and it's very tall and big. So Hashem is gadol means that the Jewish people don't look at Hashem as disconnected. On the contrary, as great and as exalted and as awesome as Hashem is still down here on earth running the world. As great and exalted as he is, he is still running the world. Hashem is gadol, he's great. We perceive Hashem in our lowly state of being. The greater you are, the more you can recognize the greatness of Hashem. And then there is a level of greatness of Hashem that's way beyond our comprehension. But gadol doesn't exclude having a connection to the lower part. So Hashem is gadol. Our perception of Hashem is that, and our belief in Hashem is that he is connected to this world and is running this lower world. And we can perceive him in this lower world. That is why we set, what's what it means, laseis gadula liyotzer bereishis, to attribute greatness to the Creator. We're not calling Hashem as rum, as exalted. He's up there and disconnected, but gadula. We attribute greatness to Hashem. We recognize Hashem's greatness is beyond our comprehension, but there is a level of his greatness that we do comprehend because Hashem is involved in the world. And that's exactly what we do, what we say when we say Hallel. In Hallel we say, Mi kashem eloikeinu magbihi lashaves, who is like our God, hamagbihi lashaves, who sits up high, hamashpili lirois bashamayim uva'aretz, who lowers to see the heaven and earth. Hamashpili lirois bashamayim the heaven and earth. Hashem is way above everything, beyond everything in his essence. But he's mashpili, but with all that greatness that he has, and as high and far as he is from our comprehension, he's mashpili lerois. He sits up high. And the higher you are, the more you recognize you could see his divine presence. But at the same time, mashpili, he lowers into this world. And we recognize how he lowers into this world. And that's his greatness. His greatness is that he is connected to this world. And from there, he goes way up high. But he's gadol, he's great. We attribute greatness. We attribute Hashem's greatness, and Hashem is great. But part of that greatness is that he is still connected down here in our world and running and being master of the world. So that's laseis gadula liyotzer bereish. That's laseis gadula. That's the word gadula. The word gadula is very specific, very specific. Now, laseis gadula liyotzer bereishis. Why are we referring to Hashem here as the creator of the beginning? The answer is because again, in contrast to the nations of the world, they recognize Hashem created the world, but see him as rum, as exalted, as high up, and disconnected, meaning he created the world and then done with it. Then he doesn't really bother with the world. We attribute gedula, we attribute greatness to the Creator, because we say that even after he created the world, he is great in the sense that he is connected below. There's a low part of this big thing that we can connect to because he runs, because he is involved in our world. Okay, so that's Liyotz, that's Laseis, Gedula, Liyotz, Abracious, to attribute greatness to the Creator of the beginning. Next, Shaloi Asanu K'gayei HaRatzais. He did not make us like the nations of the lands. V'loi Samanu K'mishpachais HaAdam, he did not make us like the families of the earth. Okay, so Shaloi Asanu K'gayei HaRatzais, did not make us like the nations of the lands. Nations of the lands. Says the Sivasei Chachamim, there is, again, the wording here is very exact, and there's a lot of meaning to it. Goyei Aretzais, Sifsachem explains, means the following. And that is that besides for the Jewish people, any ancient people that have been exiled from their land, they don't last. They eventually just disappear. And the Jewish people are the only ancient nation that's still around, even after being exiled from place to place to place. And he explains that the reason for this is because every nation really is very, it's the existence of every nation is dependent on the land that it came from. It's unique, it's nourishment, it's spiritual nourishment, it's existential nourishment to be able to last is through its connection to the country that it started from. And it's in that country that it gets its ability to exist. Because it's in that country, every country has its own, so to speak, spiritual properties. And Those spiritual properties are the properties that are essential for the people living there. It's something that's how their existence works.
The culture.
Whatever you call it. But all that culture, the culture is a sign of the fact that these are the properties that these people need and that they actually nourish from the land that they're in. And once they get disconnected from their land, they're disconnected to their source of existence is gone. Every nation is unique. Every land is unique, and it's not coincidence.
So
the uniqueness of the people in their land is because the existence of those people comes from the land that they developed on, and therefore, when they are exiled from their land, they lose their connection to their source.
They blend into the other ones.
Right, but that's because they've lost their connection to the land, which is their source of existence, and they just mix in with everybody else. Right. Now, the Jewish people, on the other hand, don't work that way. Because we have been exiled from our land more than once, and we're still here. And that's because, says the Sibse Chaim, where did we become a nation? Where did the Jewish people form as a nation?
In exile.
Yeah.
It started in Mitzrayim on the night of Pesach, and it continued receiving the Torah in the desert. So the Jewish people had no country when they became the Jewish nation, which means that the existence of the Jewish nation, or the Jewish nation as a nation, takes its existential nourishment is not from the land that it's in, but really from its connection to Hashem through the Torah. And the Jewish people were formed in a desert. They weren't formed in a land. So they're not dependent on the land. Their existence doesn't depend on the country that they're in. More than that, says the Sibsei Chachamim, they became a nation in a desert, not in a land. And even after they got a land, which is clearly the land for the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael is meant to be for the Jewish people. It's meant to complete the Jewish people. Without Eretz Yisrael, we cannot be complete. Nonetheless, again, we're not dependent on our existence. He says, look at the fact that when it came to getting Eretz Yisrael, we had to conquer it. It means basically, we had to go and take away a land that looked like it was somebody else's. And as Rashi tells us, that the Torah starts with Bereishis, so that people shouldn't say the Jewish people are thieves. Hashem created the world, it's his world, and he gives it to who he wants. But at the end of the day, the Jewish people didn't start off in a land like other nations did. Why? Why was it that way? Why couldn't they have a land? As a matter of fact, the Sibse Chachamim points out that the Ramban writes that actually once the Jewish people left Eretz Yisrael, there was no nation who was able to settle it and really develop it. No one's able to do it. Because once Klal Yisrael conquered Eretz Yisrael, the land can only be what it is with the Jewish people. Okay, but so if Eretz Yisrael is meant to be for the Jewish people, why didn't they start there? And the answer is the same idea. Because our existence as a nation is not dependent on Eretz Yisrael.
Not physical.
The whole existence of the Jewish nation as a nation, physically, spiritually, which is, of course, one thing, is not dependent on a land, but rather on its connection to Hashem through the Torah. And therefore, when we say, Shaloi asanuk v'yar retzais, and it make us like the nations of the lands, We're thanking Hashem for the fact that we as a people don't need a country to exist. We have our connection to the Rabbanu Shalom with Torah to be able to exist. Okay, next. V'loi samanuk mishpachai sa adamai. Do not make us like the families of the earth. Okay, what does that phrase mean? Families of the earth. So he explains it in two ways. One way of explaining families of the earth is that the earth always represents nature. And therefore, the families of the earth means that the nations of the world, they basically believe that everything runs by nature. Their lives are dependent on the physical nature. We don't believe that. We understand that our lives are beyond nature. We're not dependent on nature. So, not make us like the families of the land, means again, the nations that see their entire dependence and lives depending on nature. Or it means something else. Or it means that again, Adama, earth, land, also represents like the most mundane, the most physical. And that would mean that the families of the earth means that their essence is connected to the earth. It's connected to the physical, to the material. Their aspirations are material. The Jewish people are not the families of the earth. Their aspirations are the closest to Hashem. And he brings a very interesting medrash that says that kol tefilasan shel briyos eina ela ala aretz. The prayers of other peoples are about the land. They basically say, they ask Hashem, if they daven to Hashem, they ask Hashem, bring the fruits out of the land. At the end of the day, what's it all about? What's the main thing? The physical, the material. The Jewish people ask, says the Medrash, bring the Beis HaMikdash back. Allow me to dwell in the Beis HaMikdash. Bring your Shechina, bring your divine presence amongst us. Whatever you daven for, that really shows, you know, where your aspirations are. You know, there's a story about a Chassidish Rebbe talked about, you know, how a person davens on Rosh Hashanah. So a person on Rosh Hashanah davens Baruch Gelt, Ata Gelt, Hashem Gelt, Elokei Gelt. You know, he davens Rosh Hashanah. What's everything about? Gelt, money, right? That's not what Rosh Hashanah is supposed to be about. Anytime we're davening, we're supposed to be davening for our connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. Yes, we ask for our needs. But we ask for our needs, not as a goal in itself, but to be able to serve Him. So what we daven for and the way we daven, that shows what our true essence is, what our inner essence is, what do we aspire to. L'ismanak mishbuchay swadamba means that we thank Hashem for being not made like the families of the land, not like people who their main connection aspirations are physical and material, but rather whose true desire is, as we will say, is to worship Hashem. Shaloi sam chalkeinu kohem. He did not make our portion like theirs. What does portion mean? So he explains like this. Every person, every nation, everybody in the world has a mission. And that mission is, in some form or manner, to reveal Hashem in the world. It's called Gilui, it's called to Megala Kveit Shemayim, to reveal the honor of heaven. That is what everybody's mission in this world is. Everybody is meant to do that. Everybody's meant to do that. The difference is that the way the nations of the world are meant to do it, and the way we as a Jewish people are meant to do it, is very different. Basically, as he explains, and I'll share with you a very interesting Gemara in Avodah Zarah, famous Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Basically, our mission in revealing God in this world is basically that we live our lives and serve Hashem in a way that we are Hashem's agents to reveal his existence in the world through our actions, through the way we live our lives. Right? We are the ones who are supposed to, so to speak, directly reveal Hashem's malchus, Hashem's kingdom in the world. Other nations of the world, their purpose is to make it possible for us to reveal Hashem's kingdom in the world. That's their mission. Their mission is, again, they have to develop, the world needs to be developed. There's many important things that the world needs to be developed. But at the end of the day, everything in the world is developed so that the Jewish people can serve Hashem. Everything in the world is somehow or another. We don't necessarily recognize how. But it all comes together to enable the Jewish people to serve Hashem and to directly reveal Hashem's kingdom in the world. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says like this. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that in the future, all the nations of the world are going to come before Hashem, and they're going to be judged. And when Hashem says to them, "So what'd you do? What'd you do in the world?" They're going to say, "I'm lefanav." They're going to say to Him, "Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the World, harbe shvakim tikneinu. We made many markets. Harbe merchatzayis asinu. We made many bathhouses. Harbe kesef azav herbinu. We made a lot of gold and silver. V'kulam lo asinu ela b'shvil Yisrael. You know why we did it? All for the Jewish people. Kedei she's asked about Torah, so that they should be able to be involved in living Torah. What's they going to say? Amar lema kadosh baruch hu. B'nishlam is going to say, Shaitim sheba'ilam, you fools. Kol masha asisem. Why you do all these things? Letzarech atzmechem asisem. You did it all for yourselves. That's the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Now, if you think about it, who do they think they're fooling when they said it the first time? They're talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So what are they thinking? They think they're going to fool their Rebbeinu Shlomo and say, oh, we did it all for the Jewish people? So the Biskarav explained the following. They know. They know it. They understand that they didn't do it for the Jewish people. But their point is, look, but at the end of the day, everything that we did was for the Jewish people. At the end of the day, that's what it was for. So at the end of the day, whatever we did benefited the Jewish people. So give us reward for that. So Hashem says to them, you're fools. Because if that wasn't your intention, if that wasn't what you were doing it for, you were doing it all for yourselves, you can't claim anything. But the point is, from this Gemara, and this is where there's a Rambam that writes this, is that everything that ever has been built, anything that's ever been built, is for the purpose for at some point for a year to benefit from and to use. And therefore, what the point is that Shalai Semichal Kenu, our chalik, our portion, is not like theirs. Everybody has a portion. Everybody has a mission to bring out, to show the world that Hashem exists, to bring out, to reveal Hashem in the world. But there's different missions. The Jewish people have their unique mission. Everybody else has their mission. We thank Hashem for the fact that we are part of, not of their portion and not of their mission, but of the unique mission of the Jewish people. And then we say, V'goyralenu kachol haminam. And Hashem has not made our lot like the kachol haminam, like all their multitudes, right? For he has not assigned our portion like theirs, nor our lot like all their multitudes. What is this referring to, our lot like their multitudes? So my understanding here is that Chalkeinu, our portion, is looking at the Jewish people as a whole in contrast to the other nations. So we have a job and they have a job. When we have a job and they have a job, every individual has their unique part of the mission. Every individual has their unique part in fulfilling the mission. And everybody has a goyrel. Everybody has a lot. Everybody has a mazel. Mazel means, when you talk about mazel means, what is it? What are the powers that Hashem has given a person to be able to use in fulfilling his mission of revealing Hashem in the world? Every single person has their unique mission. Every single person is given their unique part in doing so. So this part, the goyrelin chalameinim, and our lot, is not like their multitudes, means every single person has their lot. Every single person has their portion that they're given, their talents and their capabilities and everything about them to fulfill the mission and be part of the bigger mission of revealing Hashem in the world. And we thank Hashem for our lot, for the fact that each and every individual Jew has their unique lot, which again is part of that unique mission, different than the other nations of the world. So what do we say next? We say, Shehem Ishtachavim lo Hevel Varik. They bow to Hevel Varik, vanity and emptiness. Umispalim el Elo Yeshia, and they pray to a God or to a power that helps not. Now, this line, as we mentioned before, was taken out for a long time. It was taken out of the Siddur because of the censors. Later on, but it seems like on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they always said it. And later on, as time went on and people weren't as afraid anymore, they reincorporated it. Okay? So this line, they dive into vanity and emptiness. So what's vanity and what's emptiness? And what does it mean, Kelo Yeshia, God that doesn't save? So the Sif Chaim explains this in the following way, again, based on the Malbim. The Malbim explains, Hevel is like, the word Hevel, besides being vain, is vapor. Right? It's nothing. Hevel means nothing. There are certain people who worship nothing. They worship a rock. They worship a tree. There's nothing to it, but they still worship it for some reason. That's Hevel. Nothing. Rik means empty. Empty means there's an outer shell, but the inside's empty. And that's referring to those who worship the stars.
The what?
Stars.
The skies.
The skies, the stars, the constellations. Those that they worship some things that seem to, that from the outside, look like they have a power, but they really don't. Why? Because even the stars have a power above it, and that power is the angels. We know there's an order, right? Hashem runs the world, but he has his agents that things go through. You have the angels, you have the stars. The stars may look like they're kind of in control, but really they're controlled by something else. Those are the angels. So they're called Rik, empty. On the outside, they look like something, but they're really not. And then it says, they dive into a power that doesn't save. That would mean to say that they dive into, even if they, let's say they dive into an angel. But again, an angel can't save, because even an angel doesn't have its own power. Everything is just a conduit for the Ribbono Shel Olam. For whatever reason, the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever he does in running the world, he does it through conduits. He does it through pipes. So you've got the angels, and you've got the stars. You've got all these different means by which Hashem's flow of life and energy comes through. But again, they're all lo yeshia. There's nothing that could actually save anything. Nothing that has the power to save. And the Sifsei Chaim refers to the Rambam in Hilchas Avodah Zarah, when the Rambam talks about how did idol worship form? How did it come to be? So the Rambam says that what happened was that people got this idea that being that Hashem created stars and constellations to run the world, and he put them high up, and gave them a lot of honor, and they are his servants. It's worthy, it's appropriate to praise them, ulafarum, and to beautify them, v'lachak lehem kavod, and to give them honor. V'zehu ratzon HaKel Baruch Hu, this is Hashem's will, l'chabed ha'emdim lefanav. Every king wants you to honor those who stand before him. And therefore, the appropriate thing is to honor Hashem's servants. Hizchilu livnais l'kaychavim heichalais l'hakrav lehem karbonais. They began to build for the stars these sanctuaries, and they brought them sacrifices, and they used to bow to them, thinking that this is going to give pleasure to Hashem. That's how the worship of the stars, that's how pagan worship began. So it all first began by saying, look, these are Hashem's servants, we should give them honor. The mistake in that was, is that, but they're not real servants. They're just conduits, they're just pipes. But they're not really doing anything on their own. It's not like, in this world, you've got a hierarchy, right? So you may have someone on the, there's a person who's like, he's a local government official, and then you have the mayor, and then you have the state representative, and the governor, etc., right? Each person has their domain, and they have their domain of governance. And within that domain of governance, they're in charge. They're running the show. Some people have you start with a smaller sphere, and then as you go up, the sphere is bigger. But each person in their little sphere is the authority, and they're running the show. So the people thought that this is what was happening with the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, and then after he created the world, he kind of designated, he delegated to the stars, to the moon, to the sun. Things were delegated. So at first, the idea was that this should be a form of serving Hashem. But then as time came on, it began serving them. Because after all, the Ribbono Shel Olam, he doesn't really want to bother. He doesn't really bother with anything. He's not the one. He's delegated things to other powers. And these other powers, they are the ones in charge. So it only makes sense that we should pray and praise them. So Rambam says, until the point came that they forgot about the Ribbono Shel Olam. But the point is that in different levels, there is that even if you believe the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, but there are different levels in which there's a belief that the pagan worship is that things have been delegated to powers, and those powers are made authoritative powers. They are authorities. So we got to make them happy. But that's not true. Any power is lo yeshia. There's no power that can say, there's no power that can do anything, because there's no power that's doing anything on its own. Nothing's been giving its own power to do. Everything is the Ribbono Shel Olam's doing. Everything is his will, his decree. Everything is what he sends down, the energy he sends down to create existence. And anything that seems to be doing anything is just a conduit, just a pipe for things to come through. And therefore, we say, they bow to vanity, to things that are completely nothing, rik, things that have a shell but are empty, and they dive into a god, to a power that cannot save. There's no. They think that there are these powers that have their own authority and their own control and capability. But there's nothing that has that. But rather, anachnu karim mishtachavim umaydim. We, karim means kneel, mishtachavim means going down on your knees, mishtachavim means to bow. But to bow here means to completely spread your hands, meaning not just be on your knees and bow down your face to the ground. Mishtachavoya really is where you're flat out on the ground. Legs out, you're lying on the ground with your head down and prostrating yourself to someone. That's what Mishtachavoya is. We kneel, we mishtachave, how do they translate it? We bow, but again, bow here, it doesn't just mean your knees on the ground and going forward. It means where you are completely spread out on the ground in your subjugation to Hashem. Umaydim, and we acknowledge, and we give thanks, lifnei melech malchayam lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, before the King of all kings. You know, you can have a governor who's a ruler, you can have a president who's a ruler, you can have a lot of different rulers, but the ultimate ruler is the Ribbono Shel Olam. They daven and they put their trust and they put their hopes in vain, in things that have no ability to save. But we, Olenu Shebech, we're giving praise to Hashem over the fact that we have that privilege of being able to kneel, bow, acknowledge, give thanks before the King of all kings, the Holy One, blessed be He.